If you're looking to create, grow, and sustain your wealth, download and subscribe to the Pain Points of Wealth podcast at BeBullish.com with Bob, Ryan, and Chris Payne. It's your podcast for market insights, money tips, and real talk on the economy.
Download and subscribe
at BeBullish.com.
This is another Side of Midnight
with TJ McCormack.
Now to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC.
Here's TJ McCormack.
Red Apple Audio Network, Walter M. Sterling. Look at you. Good evening. This is our time. It's just you and me. I swear, there's no better time to be on the radio. What a gift. What a pleasure it is to share this time with you. One-on-one radio, Route 80, I-90, otherwise known as the Luge, up and down, the 5, the 101, I-95. And yet, how many of these roads are free, and how many of them are toll roads? It is a criminal fact that all of the toll roads in America were promised to be temporary. No, that's right. They were all supposed to be temporary. What did that mean? It meant that all of the toll roads were paid for with bonds. Bonds that you and your naive friends voted for and said, yes, we need better roads. They raised the bonds, and then they made an announcement. We're opening this road, but we have to collect a toll. Why do we have to collect a toll? We have to collect a toll to pay off the bonds. Oh, well, what happens when you pay them off? Well, once we pay them off, there'll be no more tolls. Okay, well, that was 45. Why are the tolls still there? The reason the tolls are still there is because there's a clause in every single charter of every toll road that says they can collect the tolls until and unless, in the opinion of this authority, it is necessary for safety reasons to build more road. We can raise bonds and collect the toll until those bonds are paid off. In other words, as long as they're pouring concrete, they can build more road and collect the tolls. As long as they're pouring concrete, that is the key to our unhappiness. And again, I am fascinated by the fact, as are you, that in northern England, there are Roman roads that are 2,000 years old. They work just fine. There's no problem. In fact, the tolls do not go to repair the roads. The tolls primarily go for the bonds. In most states, the gasoline tax, that's what repairs the road. That's what you're up against. You think you're going to beat this? No, but it's criminal how much the difference is between 18-wheelers and 4-wheelers. 18-wheelers pay easily 10 times more for the same trip than 4-wheelers. Oh, and they're watching us. What's particularly scary to me, you know, in your industry, nail salons, retirement homes, senior living homes, in your industry, it's normal for there to be conventions, conferences. They talk to each other on newsletters. Maybe you get a monthly newsletter. People who run the airports in America have a monthly newsletter. People who own car washes have a weekly newsletter called American Clean Car. Supermarket owners have Modern Grocer. These are vital publications to share information in the best way. Well, guess what? These crooks who run the toll roads in America, they also have a newsletter. It's called Tollway News. Tollway News. It's a daily. There's so much going on with these toll roads that you and I knew nothing about. There's so much going on that they need to talk to each other. And the stories are things like, yes, Denmark has finally agreed to toll their citizens $20 a mile. Yay! And they celebrate every new toll. They celebrate every additional toll road. Well, those are bad odds for us. If they're celebrating new toll roads and new tolls, that's tough for us. But it gets worse. They also study, according to Tollway News, which you can look up yourself, according to Tollway News, They also give strategies on how to get new legislation supporting tolls through local town councils, city councils. They're able to do all of that by communicating with each other. Here's how to deal. Here's what to do with an obstructionist mayor. If there's a mayor giving you a hard time, this is what's worked. If a city council is refusing to give you instant approval of your toll increase, this is what you can do. What does that mean? What it means to you and me, and I'm Walter Sterling. Good evening. I'm on the Red Apple Audio Network. You and I are sharing information about the horrors known as America's tolls. What puzzles me, I have never heard a politician say, if I'm elected, I'm going to get rid of the tolls. And that's stupid, because what is the key point, the key relationship between you, me, and the government? It's the tolls. You probably go to work on a toll road. You see the toll every day. You give these clowns money every day. That is our primary relationship with the government. I can't stand it when I hear talk show hosts waste airtime talking about things that have nothing to do with our day, have absolutely nothing to do with our day. Today in Congress, somebody made a face at Donald Trump. Fox News reports, today somebody made a bad face at Donald Trump. Later on the Five. It has nothing to do with me. I have to deal with the government every time I have to pay a toll. That is my relationship with the government. I have to deal with the government every time I need to get a new driver's license to register my car, that my kid is having trouble in school at those government schools. That's the stupidest thing. Those are public schools. They are our public schools because they're locally run or state run. Don't get me started. Those are the issues, and those are very big deals. What you and I care about, it seems that too many in the media think it's unimportant. I'm going to go through what I think is important. See if any of this relates. See if you can relate to any of what I'm about to say. What's important to me is that when I get in the car in the morning, the check engine light doesn't go on. Now, I have a 9-year-old car. It wants to turn on the check engine light. Its fantasy is to turn on the check engine light. It wants to torment me with that. That's what it wants to do. That's the check engine light. When I open the basement door and I look down the steps, at the bottom of the steps, what do I see? If I see water, I'm terrified because I don't know where it came from. I don't know how to get rid of it. I don't know what's going on, but I'm damn sure of one thing. It will cause permanent damage to my home. It will impact the value of that home forever because they'll be looking for watermarks in the basement and in the ceiling, and they're going to find them. That affects me in a profound way. That, to me, is a big deal. When my baby Samantha comes home and she had a bad day at school and she won't tell me why, and I say to her, could I please see your homework? And she won't let me see it. And I'm like, I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm sure your homework's good. No. And then she hides it. And then months later, after I've asked over and over again, finally I do get to see it. The curriculum book. What do they call it? No, the assignment book. Your kids have assignment books? Yeah, so she has an assignment book. When I see the assignment book and I go through it page after page, her being in fifth grade, I go through it page after page and after page. Have you ever done this with your kid? I'm not talking about your teenager's diary. Don't be stupid. Don't even waste your time. If you open up your teenager's diary, what are you going to see? What are you going to see? You're going to see something that will upset you. Promise. You will see something that will upset you. Why do that to yourself? Why volunteer for that? There's no reason for that. But I'm talking about a 12-year-old, an 11-year-old, when I open up her assignment book, what do I see? I see drawings, line drawings of figures, some of them stabbing each other, some of them hugging each other, some of them kissing each other. And then I turn the page and I see more figurines. And every page on both sides of her assignment book is showing, revealing, drawing. Not one word in that assignment book. And her job as a student was to write down her next assignment, to write down the next assignment. And she was so good at faking it that when she drew, it looked like she was writing. Yeah, okay, she was writing, but she wasn't writing words. Well, the problem here is she's 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and she can't write. And it gets better. When I have said to her teachers over time, why can't she write her name? Oh, she can write. No, she can't. Oh, I've seen her write. No, you haven't. She can't write. She's such a good phony baloney that if a teacher looks over the classroom and sees my daughter scribbling, drawing in her assignment book, she's fooled. The teacher's fooled. They think that she can write. She can't write. And then I came, and I'm telling you this to share this with you, because I hope this never happens to you. I hope this never happens to you. I said to them, I want to see her writing. Could I see her writing? Oh, yes, she's a great writer. She writes wonderfully. And there I am with her special ed teacher. This is in fifth grade. There she is with her special ed teacher telling me about the wonderful writing that she's doing. Yeah, okay, let me see it. And they take out an iPad. And the iPad shows me a typed story. That has been dictated into the iPad by the special ed teacher. Not only did my kid not handwrite anything, not only did my kid not dictate it into the iPad and have it translated into text, speech to text, very useful for you and me, but you and I can write. Those are the challenges. She couldn't write. And what do they do? What do the school system do? Sure, she can write. No, she can compose. And she dictates to you, and you are speech to text. That's what they tried to scam on me. That was the scam they tried to pull on me, to tell me that my daughter could write. Well, my daughter can't handwrite, and she could compose and say stuff to her special ed teacher. And then on conference day, what do? They reveal this to me as a fact that this kid can write. This is horrible. This is as bad as it gets. And that had gone on for too long, and shame on me for not catching it sooner. But when a teacher says to me, sure, she can write, I believe she can write. One of the challenges that you and I have having young children in school today, and good evening, I'm Walter Sterling, and you and I get to spend this time together. It's a magical time of day, going from Saturday into Sunday. This is a special time, Sunday morning in America. Sunday morning in America. They don't do Sundays like this in the rest of the world. We're very good at breakfast. Even like serious gourmet types, Gordon Ramsay, they all admit that, well, Americans really do breakfast first. But yes, we do it first, but we do it best. That's what they know. They know that about us. These giant, obscene breakfasts, we're very good at this.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with TJ McCormack, 77 WABC.
Looking for financial insights you can trust?
How do you protect yourself as an investor? What's the strategy?
I think it's really simple. I think you just want to be diversified in your portfolio.
The Payne family brings real-world experience to every conversation.
Well, I think that's the problem right now, is right? A lot of people that are close to retirement, they're taking so much risks, and if we do get a big sell-off, it could derail their retirement.
Listen to the Payne Points of Wealth on the Red Apple Podcast Network.
It's Another Side of Midnight.
Political humorist TJ McCormack.
Now to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC.
Here's TJ McCormack.
The The Red Apple Audio Network with Walter Sterling. Good evening. Here we are on Sunday morning. Try to behave. What, you just get in? You just getting in now? How's that headache? How's that hangover? Can you find the bed? Isn't it interesting when you come home at this hour, how many times you get in the bed and it starts spinning? You realize that that isn't a real thing. It's spinning because you're drunk. Well, know how to get rid of the hangover. You ready? I don't know if you can handle this. Don't drink. Oh, you're so moralistic. No, I'm a chemist. I'm taking off my coat because I just came in to spend time with you. Now, I will tell you the difference between school when you and I were in school and today. It's important to know, especially if you have kids or in your case, great-great-grandchildren. Here's the difference. It's about management of time. There's a phrase that you and I did not hear when we were in school. It was called executive functioning. Executive functioning. Executive functioning is the ability to determine what is most important first and then to hit it on time, to get it done on time. That requires both a sense, a sixth sense of time, the passage of time, and also discretion, the ability to look at five or six assignments and know what is the most important. Often, who made that sound? Often it is because of time. Let me start again. Hello, Walter Sterling, Red Apple Audio Network. Good evening. This is our time. Executive functioning. This seems to be a plague of trouble. When you and I were in school, we never heard the phrase executive functioning. What executive functioning is the ability for an individual to judge by themselves without help whether or not a project is important and when it is due, which requires a sensation and understanding of the passage of time, but also it requires judgment. What's the most important thing? Which teacher is toughest? Which assignment will take me the longest? It is, there are many factors, but it comes down to judgment. The teacher said this was due on Monday. She seemed very serious about it. It's a big assignment. It's going to take me a long time. I better start as soon as possible. That's executive functioning. Well, boys and girls, it turns out that executive functioning successfully is a plague of failure in our public schools. A plague. When my first kid came home in first or second grade and with notes about how they're doing, it said executive challenged with executive functioning. And that's when I learned what the phrase was. Well, now that I've spent some time with these damn schools, I know why executive functioning is a problem, because it is not taught. Well, how the hell do you teach that? Hard deadlines. When you were in school, right when they had that big stove in the middle of the room, the big potbelly stove in the middle of the room, when you were in school, the teacher said, this is due at noon on Tuesday. And when was it due? Noon on Tuesday. You needed to learn how to hit the mark of noon on Tuesday. That's what you had to do. Those don't exist anymore. Now, what I'm going to share with you, you're going to go, oh, don't be crazy, Walter Sterling. It's insane. I'm not crazy. Kid comes home. I have this assignment due Tuesday. You have it done due Tuesday. It's going to be hard to make it. Oh, but I can get the teacher to change their mind. You can what? I can get the teacher to change their mind. You can negotiate the deadline. Oh, yeah. It happens all the time. I can turn it in Thursday instead of Tuesday. How the heck does that work? Well, I'll just go to him and I'll say, I really need more time on this. And they'll give me more time. I'm not talking about special ed accommodations. I'm talking about normies and that don't need accommodations, don't need a formal accommodation. They need to see the paper in on Tuesday. Any kid in most classrooms today can negotiate the deadline for any project, any exam, any reading, anything. Oh, I have to go to the dentist Tuesday. Oh, I have to go ice skating Friday. I have to go to my dance class today. I can't do it. I need more time. when you were in school, and I'm not saying this was better, but I'm saying there wasn't a problem with executive functioning. When you were in school, if dance class was going to get in the way of the homework, dance class was canceled. You didn't go to dance class. You stayed home and got the homework done. That is how you learn executive functioning, time management, priorities. That's how you learn it. They don't teach it anymore. What else don't they teach? Cursive handwriting. Third grade was committed to cursive handwriting. You're not writing many checks. There's very little need for it. And it's fine. It would be good to teach reading it. But to waste 6 months teaching how to write it, and then the girls always doing better than the boys, seems unfair. There was always one girl who was a poet in her soul, who dressed a little prettier than the other girls, who had a few extra ribbons, and she had magnificent handwriting. Remember her, Robin? She had the most magnificent handwriting. It was art. Could have framed hers. Meanwhile, me, left-handed man, good luck reading anything I wrote. No, I didn't go to one of those schools where you were punitive toward lefties, but it was a challenge. The whole environment, the whole system is punitive toward lefties, isn't it? Good luck to those of you who have wondered writing in a spiral-bound notebook or a three-ring binder. How do lefties have to write in a three-ring binder? We had to open it up, take out the sheet of paper, and then close it back. And then as her hand went over the ink, even ballpoint pen ink, not fountain pen ink, the way you had it back when Grandpa took you to school in the horse-drawn carriage, it would drag the ink across the paper, and our hands would have that nice blue paint job on the side of the hand. It was a pain in the butt to be left-handed. I also found out scary things about lefties. They are more prone to depression. They're more prone to sadness. I don't know why. I always felt I had the right parents. My parents always made me feel that I was special because I was left-handed, that I was magical because I was left-handed. I hope your parents did that, too. There's nothing wrong with being left-handed. Duh. Did I have to say that? Did I just mansplain that on this radio network, the Red Apple Audio Network, Walter Sterling? I have an email. It's WalterMSterling@gmail.com. Every company I've worked with has refused to give me a corporate email. I don't know why, but I've never gotten one. Maybe the Red Apple Audio Network will give me an actual email address so I don't have to keep promoting Google. But anyway, until that happens, it's WalterMSterling@gmail.com, WalterMSterling@gmail.com. There are other things that are not happening in school today that you don't know about because the kid doesn't know it's supposed to be there. They are not taught how to read an analog clock. If you say to most kids, hey, this is going to happen at the top of the hour. They're listening to the radio and the DJ goes, hey, this will happen at the top of the hour. They have no idea what you're talking about. Well, this is a bottom of an hour thing. No, they have no idea what you're talking about. It is essential to tell children today digital time. What is digital time? They can read that. They can't read an analog round clock. They don't teach it anymore either. But it gets more exciting. What was that over there? So they're not. They don't have hard deadlines. They don't have analog clocks. They don't have phys ed the way you remember it. And this is the good part. They don't have to climb the rope anymore. They don't have to do cat's cradle on the high bar. They don't have to do parallel bars anymore. In fact, they don't have to do anything. All a kid has to say is, I don't want to do it. They don't need a parent note anymore. They don't have mandatory swimming anymore. When I was in high school, in order to graduate, I had to be able to dive into the pool and swim across it, and then I could graduate. I could never do it. I can swim, but I cannot dive. I can't put my head first. Some wacky problem. I don't know, some psychological psychiatry problem, but I cannot put my head first and dive. Can you? There are also new sports you didn't know about. Yes, there's pickleball. They actually do play pickleball. There's actually Ultimate Frisbee. Ultimate Frisbee. Ultimate Frisbee is a great sport because in the rules, you can't shove anybody. You can't touch anybody. You can't hurt anybody. That's a good rule. And then when is the game over? When everybody's tired. That's what we want. They still have, I'm just going over the things quickly in my head. Oh, the other thing they don't have, this will sound stupid, but it's something I miss. I don't know why the hell do I miss this. The aroma of a mimeograph machine. There's no teacher, much less any student, who knows what a mimeograph machine is. I'm not going to bore you with that, and I'm not going to screw up my demographics by going into that. But there are no more mimeograph machines. Just letting you know. I had a teacher who did something, no, nothing like that, who did something that would have gotten her fired today for sure. In my sixth grade class at Jefferson School in Maplewood, New Jersey, there was a blonde girl. We had never seen a blonde girl before. Those schools in Maplewood were filled with Irish Catholics, Italians, and Jewish kids. There were no blondes in there. In sixth grade, the most exotic and remarkable thing appeared in our sixth grade, Christine. Christine appeared. Unclear where she came from, not of this earth. Christine, I guess, was attractive enough. She had a huge personality. Big personality. And blonde hair. What? White blonde hair. It was like one of the Morlocks. No, it was like one of the Eox or whatever in the Time Machine, the Rod Taylor Time Machine, which was the correct one. Why? Because Yvette Mimieux was running around in a loincloth. You remember Yvette. Of course you do. You had terrible thoughts about her that are respectable. What? All right, so Christine would kind of tease me and my friend Jeff and kind of make fun of me and my friend Jeff. And she'd kind of give us a hard time. She was an interesting girl because in sixth grade, she could give every boy a hard time. That was also something I had not experienced before, but it's something I admired even at the time. Well, one day, our teacher, next to our classroom was an art supply closet. Our teacher takes us into the art supply closet, a woman teacher. And she starts waving her finger at us. And she said, "You boys have to stop talking to that Christine because she's trying to get your goat. And she knows just exactly how to do it." Now, I had never heard the 1920s old timey phrase, "get your goat." In fact, I still don't know what "get your goat" means. I know what a goat is. Trevor Lawrence is a goat. But I don't know. I didn't know. But imagine a teacher taking us into the art supply closet and giving us a hard time, telling us that Christine is trying to get our goat and that we shouldn't indulge her. We shouldn't let her get away with it. At no time today would a female teacher take two boys into a art supply closet, you know, for the hell of it. That wouldn't happen. The most trouble I ever got in school, because I'm thinking about my elementary school experiences and sharing them with you. Walter M. Sterling, good evening. Red Apple Audio Network, good morning. Third shift, the great shift. That's what you and I are doing right now as we drive across the country or up and down I-4 in Florida. This is the best time of day to be driving that truck, isn't it? No one's on the road. And the biggest mistake that a kid could make when I was in elementary school was to pass notes. I committed two crimes in elementary school. I used to pass notes to my girlfriend, Caroline. I was in third grade. And I was complex. I had a red wax marking pencil. You know, those wax marking pencils like they use in supermarkets. And I got pink paper and I'd write her love notes in third grade. And I'd slip them to her. And sometimes, if I was lucky, she'd write back. We had an interesting teacher in third grade that I don't think would happen today. She was obsessed with the color pink. Mrs. Worcester was obsessed with the color pink. She, in fact, had a pink Cadillac, and she wasn't a Mary Kay Cosmetics girl. She was Mrs. Worcester. She was obsessed with pink. She got the school system to paint her classroom pink. It made her happy. She had tenure. And then she had pink pills, which were Necco candies. She had pink pills. Cellophane wrapped, put it in a tin. When the class was good, she would walk around through the aisles and pass out the pink pills because we had been good. This was rare. Maybe she did it, you know, 10 times a year. It was a rare and blessed event, Mrs. Worcester passing out pink pills. I don't think that would happen today. I'm not sure. However, every elementary school teacher has a drawer. Now think about this. Mrs. Worcester had a secret drawer in her desk that she would discreetly pull out when you were standing next to her. And in that drawer were the remnants, the archives of her seizing things from our desk, our pockets, our backpacks, our coats that she did not feel was appropriate. She had a drawer full of stuff that she held hostage. It was evidence that she needed that the little darling children were not really that good. In her drawer were two of my notes to Caroline, maybe more. I recognized the paper because, you see, she had walked through the aisle one day right when I was passing one of these pieces of paper to Caroline. And just very discreetly, and I'll give her credit for that, she didn't make a big scene. She just very discreetly put that big hand down and grabbed that piece of paper and took it away. Now, maybe she did that with you with your kazoo, your slinky, your Jew's harp, the pen you weren't supposed to have because you were only supposed to use pencils. Whatever it was, she would very discreetly reach down, pull it out, and then go back to her hostage drawer, where all things that were not supposed to be in her classroom were preserved for the whole school year. Then at the end of the school year, she said, if there's anything in my drawer that you feel is actually yours and you should have, please let your parents know to come pick them up. Whoa. Compounding it, raising her game. She was raising her game that the parents could come and pick it up. She wasn't keeping it. She was not stealing it. Wasn't saying you couldn't have it, but you weren't going to be getting it back. Mrs. W. There are other things that they do in school now that are new that I want nothing to do with. It wasn't better then. I'm never one of these people who said, well, you know, it was better then. No, it wasn't better then. The single dumbest rule that is creeping across our country, creeping meatballism, it's attacking us like the blob in a bad 1950s movie. You know what it is? This nonsense about denying children their cell phones. A 12-year-old does not have a cell phone. A 12-year-old has a cell phone given to them by their parents. 12-year-olds don't buy cell phones. Parents do, and parents give it to their kids. Those are technically, legally, the parents' cell phones. You have appropriated the parents' cell phone and repurposed it. That's what's happening in public schools. Big mistake. Those kids need that phone. There are many, many kids who get very anxious if they can't reach whoever, very anxious if they can't see whatever. Those aren't your phones. Those are the parents' phones.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with TJ McCormack, 77 WABC.
Rural Americans deserve access to the best our nation has to offer, especially when it comes to healthcare. Across every state and every community, America's rural hospitals are the first line of defense, protecting our families, neighbors, and loved ones. No matter where you live, hospital care doesn't clock out. They're there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Each year, America's over 5,000 hospitals care for millions of patients, providing 24/7 emergency care, delivering babies, cancer treatments, and other life-saving care that patients rely on. Behind every one of those patients are doctors, nurses, and caregivers working tirelessly to keep people healthy and safe. Hospitals are our community's lifelines. They employ our neighbors and keep our families' health. But now, some in Congress are threatening access to care. Tell Congress, protect patient care to keep America strong. Don't cut rural health care.
It's another side of midnight.
Political humorist T.J. McCormick.
Now to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC.
Here's T.J. McCormick.
The Red Apple Audio Network, Walter Sterling. Just getting out of work. Second shift. The great shift workers are at work. Hey, what are you looking at right now? I would love to see what you're looking at. Your police officer? A fireman? You're working at the... the warehouse? The Walmart warehouse, the Starbucks warehouse, the Target warehouse. I want to see a picture of it. Take a picture and email it to me. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. I just want to see where you work. These images help me do my show. But I also do it because I post where I work all the time on Facebook under Walter Sterling. There's no M on Facebook, but I put up pictures all the time. You can also see my wacky kids, all sorts of strange things that I believe in that you might actually enjoy. Good evening. This is the Red Apple Audio Network. How's that weekend working out? Is this good? Is the weather crappy? Now, you and I are dealing with the worst possible weather in the Northeast and the Northern Plains. This is the worst possible weather. Yesterday, it was 37 degrees in New York City, and the wind was 1,000 miles an hour. It was dangerous as hell. It was painful to walk two blocks. No fun. Now, I realize there are many people who are saying, you know, there are extraordinary reasons for this. No, I'm going to tell you exactly why this weather is taking place. It's winter. That's how you know that it's winter. It's because it's cold. This is what happens in winter. Now, I spend a lot of time doing Google trend searches where I look to see what you and I are actually looking at. And it's always amazing to me. The difference, the vast, vast difference between what you and I are looking at and what serious news people think we should be looking at. The four or five networks that have nightly newscasts, every month, that audience gets smaller. It gets smaller every month. There are fewer and fewer people watching traditional news on TV. Part of it is because every time I've seen a newscast throughout my life on TV, I'm like, where is my news? I never see my news. I see this highfalutin notion of news. Yeah, I went to college. Yeah, I'm smart like you. Yeah, I'm a professional talk show host. I know stuff. But I'm like, that's not my news. My news is the fact that my kid can't read an analog clock. My news is that they want $50,000 for what? A Chevrolet, a $50,000 Chevrolet, a Chevy Malibu is $50,000 for what? Do you know, in 1962, the most you could pay for an American car was $5,500. That was for a Cadillac sedan, DeVille loaded. It had every factory install there was, including, ready, factory air. 1962 was the first year for factory air. It had in a Magic Bar radio tuner that you pushed and it went clunk, clunk, clunk. And it was an electromagnetic. It was an electromagnetic tuner, clunk, 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 and it would stop on a frequency. It had a rear speaker built into it. That was something. They used to be optional. Now, your sound system has many, many speakers. But there was a time where if you wanted a rear speaker, you had to pay extra for it. And it wasn't factory installed. They were all dealer installed, which is why they were all clunky. But that was the most you could spend. And now, you know, I was shopping for cars the other day for a used car. And I'm looking at what they're getting for used cars, cars with 80, 90,000 miles. They're going for $30,000, $35,000. And we're not talking fancy here. We're talking Miatas and Mazdas and other really ugly cars, which brings me to the key issue. Apparently, no American car manufacturer makes sedans. If you want sedans, you're going to have to get one from Toyota. But you're not going to get one from Cadillac. Whoa, Walter, of course Cadillac makes sedans. No. And you're not going to get one from Ford. They don't make sedans. All they all make are those hideous hatchback, what are they, SUVs, SVUs, whatever they are, they're the ugliest things. There's no such thing as a beautiful, elegant hatchback. And therefore, I was shocked when I learned that Porsche makes a hatchback. Why would Porsche do what they had to do to destroy the image of that magnificent car to make a hatchback? And if I had the money for a Porsche hatchback, I wouldn't want it because I don't want my kids in a Porsche. They'll just mess it up. They'll draw things. They'll spill things. That's what kids do. In fact, that's how you know there are children in your house. Something is always wet. Ooh, what is this on the floor? What is this on the sofa? What is this in the bathroom? What? In the house of a toddler, a 10-year-old, a 15-year-old, there's always something wet because there's always something spilled. That is the challenge. That is the challenge of children, not anything that they say. The other challenge of children is when do they stop sleeping with you? The fastest way to hear a parent lie is to say to them, when did your kid fall asleep last night? They will tell you the imaginary time that the kid is supposed to fall asleep. Oh, 8 o'clock. Kid was in bed and asleep by 8 o'clock. Never happens. That never happens. They tell you the imaginary time. And then here's how you bust them. You ready? Did the kid go to bed at 8 o'clock last night? Well, last night was different. Oh, why? Aunt Susan came in from Minnesota and she brought cheese. Oh, the kids are so excited about cheese when they go to bed then. Well, you know, Aunt Susan brought a lot of cheese. It was probably 11:45. Oh, kid went to bed at 11:45. The kid goes to bed at 11:45 every night. And then the next lie is, does the kid still sleep with you? No. We set that up. We had sleep rules right away. The kid had to be in her own bed by the age of one. She was in her own bed by the age of one. She's gone to bed in that nonsense. My three daughters slept with us till they were 11. And there was a little crossover there. I had one that was 11 and her sister was like two. Now, both of them were sleeping in bed with us, except I wasn't sleeping in bed with them anymore. I moved down the hall. I had to move my quarters down the hall. Then you read all these contradictory stories. You've read these about, is it bad for children to share a parent's bed? Or is it really good for a child to share a parent's bed? Does it help them feel secure with the world? Do they have more confidence that they're sleeping in their parents' bed than if they were sleeping alone? Nobody knows. Every kid's different. That's the most important thing about child rearing, right? Every kid's different. There's no, you do this and there will be no trouble. Because it always never factors in individual personalities. There are things that your kid is born with that you had nothing to do with. And it doesn't matter what you do. I believe that parents are like bumper cars. Like the bumper cars at an amusement park. Your kids are in the bumper cars. They're driving around. And every now and then they lose sight of where they're going and they hit the bumper in the amusement park, the big piece of foam rubber or rubber, and it bounces them back into the center of the rink, right? I believe that's what parents are like. Your kids are going to bounce around and do things and do some smart things and do some stupid things. And every now and then, you as a parent have to push the kid back into the middle of the action, get them away from being at the extreme edges of the. But that's a gentle process. It should be a gentle thing. That's what I believe parenting is. They are born with a lot of instincts and a lot of instincts. Worst mistake parents make, not the worst, but a mistake that any parent can make is assuming they actually know stuff. Kids don't know anything. Everything is taught. Everything is learned. They're all a sponge 24 hours a day. I have to teach them. That's what my job is as a parent. My job is to teach them, which brings us to Jeffrey Epstein. Please tell me how 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old young women could get on a private jet and fly 6 hours away from mommy and daddy and spend a week or 10 on a bizarro world island with really old, creepy guys like Prince Andrew. Oh, he was arrested? Why, yes. And now, not only is he no longer a prince, he's homeless. Because the king, Charles, he kept downgrading his accommodations. Now I think it's pretty much, you have no accommodations, buddy. This is what happens when mom dies. The favorite son, he was the favorite son. He was the favorite son, building resentment among all of his peers. But about the parents, where were their parents? How did that happen? Because you and I have one job. What is that job? Our job is to know where our daughters are. Are they safe? Who are they with? And what are they doing? And when are they coming home? That's our job. Oh, well, they had terrible parents. Horrible. Yeah, by definition, that those parents didn't know that, didn't know where they were and what they were doing. Yes, they had horrible parents. Didn't notice the kid wasn't home for more than an hour. No, they didn't notice the kid wasn't home for days. For days. Every parent of the Jeffrey Epstein kids needs to be in jail. Every single one of them. Many of them need to be executed. This poor girl, you know, is forced to, well, that's a different conversation. I'm not quite sure how people are forced to have sex. I'm not quite sure how that happens. But if the Prince Andrews of the world enjoy that, knowing that that girl was not enjoying it. I mean, that's scum of the earth. And now he's in jail and he's surprised and he's in shock. But think about the privileged life that Prince Andrew had with the Queen of England protecting his every move. He will probably die in jail just from shock, just from commoner food. They did not treat him differently in any way. It's good. Crimes against children? Gee, what a moralist I am. Crimes against children are terrible. Yeah, no kidding. But the parents should be in jail, every one of them. And the creepy guys, they are less at fault than the parents. The parents didn't do their job first, second, third, and fourth. Truly unbelievable. All right, this is the Red Apple Audio Network. My name is Walter M. Sterling. And I get to be with you tonight. My email is waltermsterling@gmail.com. waltermsterling@gmail.com. And this is the Red Apple Audio Network.
It's another side of midnight. 77 WABC.
Rural Americans deserve access to the best our nation has to offer, especially when it comes to healthcare. Across every state and every community, America's rural hospitals are the first line of defense, protecting our families, neighbors, and loved ones. No matter where you live, hospital care doesn't clock out. They're there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Each year, America's over 5,000 hospitals care for millions of patients, providing 24/7 emergency care, delivering babies, cancer treatments and other life-saving care that patients rely on. Behind every one of those patients are doctors, nurses, and caregivers working tirelessly to keep people healthy and safe. Hospitals are our community's lifelines. They employ our neighbors and keep our families' health. But now, some in Congress are threatening access to care. Tell Congress, protect patient care to keep America strong. Don't cut rural health care.
Okay, does this happen to anybody else? You sit down with a juicy QPC, some McNuggets, and those golden fries from McDonald's. Then you take a long sip of your Sprite because you can still hear your mama saying, "Don't fill up on that drink before you eat your food." But you're grown now, so you do what you want.
Share and share alike with a 20-piece McNuggets from McDonald's for just $6. Limited time only. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is another Side of Midnight
with TJ McCormack.
Now to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC.
Here's TJ McCormack.
Walter M. Sterling for TJ McCormack. TJ, thank you so much for the privilege of sharing this time with you, the TJ McCormack listener. And this is a very important night, and it's an important live radio show because when it's snowing outside, rule number one in American radio is talk about the snow. Listen, blizzard warning remains in effect from 1 p.m. this afternoon to 6 p.m. Monday. That's 1 p.m. this afternoon, Sunday, to 6 p.m. Monday. Blizzard conditions expected. Total accumulations between 16 and 20 inches. Winds gusting as high as 55 miles an hour. This is the one. Portions of southern Connecticut, southeast New York are going to be hit heaviest from 1 p.m. this afternoon to 6 p.m. Monday. Visibilities may drop to a quarter mile due to falling, blowing snow. Whiteout conditions are expected and will make travel treacherous and potentially life-threatening. The strong winds and weight of snow on tree limbs may down power lines and cause sporadic power outages. Travel could be difficult to impossible. Areas of blowing snow could significantly reduce visibility. The hazardous conditions could impact the Monday morning and evening commute. Strong winds could cause tree damage. More details coming up. Throughout the show, from now until 5, I will keep you up to date on any weather updates. When it's snowing outside, talk about the snow. Now, you may not see snow in southeastern New York, Connecticut, Long Island yet, but it's already snowing heavily in Cleveland. I had to travel Route 80 from Ohio to New York City tonight, and it was snowing, and it was sticking. It's coming here. 16 to 20 inches of snow. That's the first time we've heard that in years. It's a major impact. I want you to know. I'll keep you up to date as best I can, which actually is pretty well. For TJ McCormack on the Red Apple Audio Network.
Walter Sterling likes to play all night.
8 minutes past the hour, 8 minutes past the hour on the Red Apple Audio Network. Did you hear this remarkable rendition from the great song from West Side Story?
To the leering center, eyes gives her the blues. She believed nobody is illegal in his hair of blue and pink. She does everything they tell her to do, and did she forget how to think? Minnesota, take out your septum ring. Minnesota, what the hell is wrong with you? Captain now guy.
This one from West Side Story.
Maduro, I just grabbed this guy named Maduro, and suddenly he found out what happens when you F around. Maduro, we just nailed this freaking Maduro, and all his narco-commie friends will soon meet similar ends. We'll be delaying Maduro. I'll never stop taunting Maduro.
Remember the good old days.
W2RE, this is W6RRR. Good evening, Ray. You're 5'9 here in Washington. The White House itself, over.
W6RRR, W2RE.
Yes, Reagan was a ham. Did you know that? Reagan was a ham. Let's you and I talk. You ready? I do this show so you and I can talk, because I have an important theory to share with you that is not political, even though it may smell political. You ready? 800-848-9222. There's no way that J.D. Vance can become president of the United States. Not political. The big push now, I'm looking at all the social media accounts talking about such things, and I see that the big push is for Marco Rubio and Ron DeSantis, that they're going to win. That would be the ideal ticket. They will never win because they're both from Florida. And then talk about their policies. I don't want to talk about it. No, the reason J.D. Vance cannot win, that nobody is saying, clearly bright, good on the policies, all the things you care about. When you call talk radio and start screaming about things, he checks all the boxes. Don't you love those phrases? Yes, he checks all the boxes. Yeah, okay. He has a beard. There's no way today the president of the United States is going to win with a beard. The reason I know this is that over the course of the past 20 years, I used to be an executive. I was an executive in wingtip shoes, a suit from Brooks Brothers. I looked very official. I knew nothing, but I looked very official. Be leery of executives that look very official, because usually they know nothing. Trust the guy who looks like a slob. The guy who looks at a slob at work, he's the one who gets things done. He doesn't have time to keep his clothes neat. He doesn't have time to get those shoes shined. He's working. That's the guy you want to hang out with, except in the job interview. I know for a fact, and I honestly am not guilty of it, that the facial jewelry, the tattoos, the strange tattoos, and the facial hair on men, some women, I'm sure, they don't get the job. It's much harder for them to get a job. The guys who come in with a scruffy beard, trying to look cool, or that weird effect, I don't even know how they do it. How the hell do they do it? Where it looks like they just shaved 2.5 days ago, but they always maintain it. How do they maintain that? Where they look like they shaved 2.5 years ago, they just got the bedhead thing going on. They look like just got a bed with a supermodel. That guy, you hate him on sight. Oh, yes, many women love him. Women under the age of 28, they love him. And his name's usually Craig or Thurston or Tad or some name you were not given. A waspy, a high wasp country club name that you and I were not given. I'm Walter Sterling. Hi, Walter. Walter Sterling. I'll get into no country clubs. Completely impossible. 800-848-9222. Live telephone number, 14 past the hour, with Walter Sterling. For T.J. McCormack, it has been my experience that it is harder for a person to get a job if they have a beard. Now, there are two types of beards. There's the scruffy beard I'm talking about, where it looks like they shaved 2.5 days ago, but then tomorrow it looks like they shaved 2.5 days ago, and the next day, I don't know how they do that. Complete mystery to me. There are full beards. Proper full beards. The only thing I give that stupid mayor of New York credit for, he has a nice looking beard. He'd come in, he looks together. The beard helps him look together. But for too many men, the beard makes them look unshaven. There's a difference between having a beard and looking unshaven. And then I promise you, if you have a facial tattoo, unless you're trying out for the WWE, you're not going to get the job. If you have a teardrop under your eye, you're not going to get to the next place you're driving, the next 7-Eleven. If you have a teardrop under your eye, you're not going to get to the next 7-Eleven. And there used to be a code among tattoo artists that they would not tattoo faces and they would not tattoo necks. Why that code went away, I don't know, but it's wrong. They should not tattoo faces and necks. They shouldn't. It is a major liability in later in life. I have mentioned to many women, because I have 3 daughters, think long and hard before you get the tattoo anywhere in your body, because you may think it's cute, the little daisy, the cat, the doggy, but it's not going to be cute when you're 60.
And that's, hold on.
And that's what they don't think through. It's not going to be cute when they're 60. That's the challenge. Joaquim, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network. Hi, Joaquim.
Hello. First off, good morning. I have actually two relatives that are autistic, my brother-in-law and my nephew. And my brother-in-law, you know, he's a couple years behind me in his 60s. And anyway, you know, I'm going to say one thing. He has an encyclopedic knowledge of sports. It's astounding, okay, that the stats and everything that he can pull out of his head, you know, going back decades, it's amazing. You know, it's a form of genius, you know. And even my nephew, I mean, my nephew comes out with me and my brother, you know, and we sing karaoke, and he sings karaoke. And you know, in many ways, you know, there's certain things about them. And when they get interested in something, it's just amazing, at least in the experience of my family members, how smart they actually really are, actually to the point of genius. Actually, like I said, my brother-in-law, it's just amazing that, you know, that he's able to do this.
Joaquim is talking about autism because I have recently talked about my autistic daughter, who is 14 years old, on Valentine's Day. And yes, I have noticed that the things that she's interested in, she locks into, like, nobody's business. Like, you can't interrupt her when she's focused on it. And she has encyclopedic knowledge of certain things. She's obsessed with calendars.
She knows
what day something's going to happen a month from now. It's not crazy autistic, like where they can predict dates and days of the week 10 years from now. But boy, is she focused on that calendar. But I appreciate the thought, Joaquim. Thank you very much for calling at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Jerry in New Hampshire, welcome to the TJ McCormack Show on the Red Apple Audio Network. Hi.
Hey, Walter. You know, I have to disagree with you about J.D. Vance. I think that a man with a beard can be elected president. You know, beards are coming back in style. The American presidents had beards in the past, and that may have been a long time ago, but J.D. Vance was just elected vice president before that senator, and before that he was a successful businessman. So apparently people do take beards seriously.
Jerry, he cannot win a president because of that beard. Absolutely not. But thank you very much for calling 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. It's 20 past the hour, 20 past the hour with Walter Sterling for TJ McCormack, Red Apple Audio Network.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with TJ McCormack, 77 WABC. It's Another Side of Midnight.
Political humorist TJ McCormack.
Now to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC.
Here's TJ McCormack.
Walter M. Sterling for T.J. McCormack at 22 past the hour, 22 past the hour.
The president of Denison Clothes, Route 22, Union, New Jersey, says they say time waits for no man, but there is time that waits for me. There's the wrong time, the right time, good times, bad times, loving times. There's breakfast time, lunch time, quitting time, dinner time, and there's daytime, nighttime, but none of that time is the right time for me. But tell me, what kind of time is it to keep a store open from 10 a.m. to 5 of the morning? Well, that's my time, which proves it's not true the time waits for no man. It sure waits for me. Famous brands, Timely, Briggs, Ola Cassini, Burberry's, reduced up to 60%. Men's suits, $39.90. And some with vests. Slacks, $4.90. Cashmere top coats, $59.90. Sport coats, $24.90. Pyline zip out top coats, $16.90. Italian knit shirts, British sweaters, suede and leather outerwear coats. Just bring money, money talks. And it's coffee break time at Denison Clothes, Route 22, Union, New Jersey. Open 10 a.m. to 5 in the morning and open now. Reopens again at 10 a.m. and is open all day Saturday till 12 midnight. Closed all day Sunday.
10 a.m.
The president of Denison.
Thank you. Thank you, Charlie Greer. From 10 a.m. to 5 the next morning, Even as a young child, when I heard that commercial on this radio station at this time, 10 a.m. till 5 the next morning, even I as a child of New Jersey wondered, why is a clothing store open from 10 a.m. till 5 the next morning, an all-night clothing store? What has to happen at an all-night clothing store? How does that make any sense? Do you know the story about this, about Denison Clothes? I'm sure you've heard it many times because you're a radio geek. That's who's up at this time. But on WABC in New York, part of the Red Apple Audio Network, the New York radio station, the New York affiliate, used to run those commercials for that clothing store every night, 4 or 5 an hour for years and years and years. But the always the problem was 10 a.m. till 5 the next morning. Tony, what was that about 10 a.m. till 5 the next morning? And then one night, two of the sales weasels at WABC, back when it was a top 40 station, they got drunk enough to say, let's go to Denison Clothes. And it was like 2 in the morning. Let's go to Denison Clothes and see, you know, it'd be funny really to go there and see what it'd be like to go to Denison Clothes at 3 in the morning, because they're open from 10 a.m. till 5 the next morning. Bamberger's wasn't open from 10 a.m. till 5 in the next morning. Macy's, Robert Hall, all of those 60s and 50s clothing stores, those men clothing stores, they weren't open all night. It seems that the only men's clothing store, I have to adjust myself in my chair, the only men's clothing store that seemed to need to be open all night was Denison's. Now, there was a clue. There was a very big clue about what was going on there at Denison's Clothes. What was going on? Well, the big clue was that it was across from the flagship. The flagship is an iconic structure in the middle of Route 22, the busiest highway in America, the busiest highway for sure in New Jersey. It was across from the flagship, which was a nightclub. It was a nightclub. Now it's like a Best Buy, but originally it was a nightclub. The flagship is an amazing structure. In the late 1940s, some genius decided in the median of this very busy road to build a structure that looked like a cruise ship, including 3 smokestacks. It looked like a cruise ship, and you entered it by going up the gangplank. That's how you get into the flagship. It was a nightclub, open very late, in Union, New Jersey. It is possible that not the best people ran Union County, New Jersey, Essex County, New Jersey. It's possible that not the best people. It is possible that people who knew the Sopranos or could identify with the Sopranos ran the entire county with an iron fist, and they ran the flagship. But then across the street was a clothing store that was open all night. These drunk guys go in there, and there's like 2 suits. They're like 3 suits. And these guys are looking around, you know, these are WABC then executive salespeople, and they're looking around. They're going, what is the deal with only 2 or 3 suit? What's that about? What is that about? At Denison's, a Weasley guy comes from the back of the store. He goes, hey, guys, good to see you. Glad you're here. Hey, what do you want? What are you interested in, gentlemen? And they're like, you don't seem to have many suits. No. What do you want? A blonde, a redhead, a brunette? What are you interested in? What sort of are you interested in? The Red Apple Audio Network, Walter M. Sterling for T.J. McCormack. Thank you for being with me tonight, because we have the best time and you and I can talk at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. I had a traumatic experience today, which I will share with you in just seconds. But right now, let's talk to Kenny. Kenny, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network. Hi, Kenny.
Walter, that was a cliffhanger. But the blue laws kick in, too, but they stop using the blue laws. The thing is, getting to calendars, but I want to say something about beers. But in the 1700s, America went from the Julian calendar to the Georgian calendar, adding 11 days to everybody's birthday. That's why George Washington was born on February 11th, but add the 11 days, and we know it as the 22nd of February. Now, beers were not very uncommon. They were presidents had them in the 1800s and the early 1900s. I joke around a lot saying that, hey, a guy wears a beard because he's hiding something. And if you look at J.D. Vance, to me, he looks like he has a moon face. He like has a he's a tall, big guy, but he has like a round face. And that just doesn't match up with a tall guy who's not really heavy set or anything like that. So he grows a beard. He looks good in it. The chicks like him. He's the VP. He's married. And that's all that matters. And these guys will trim the beard. You know, they are meticulous when it comes to trimming it and everything. It looks like it never grows. But I seen a guy one time trimming his beard on the train in Manhattan and cutting his nails. We've reversed into a third world society, and that's what we are right now, you know. And your show, Walter, is great. I hope they team you and TJ up as co-hosts. It'd be great. Is both you have, you're like, you'll be like Abbott and TJ would be like Costello. That would be a perfect teaming up. I hope you guys, they do it. The audience likes it. Big question. I think the answer is no, but are you related to John Sterling?
If I was related to John Sterling, I wouldn't need to work. I would just do whatever I could to stay in his good graces, in his will. Great broadcaster, great man. I am not. Thank you very much for your kind words. Thank you very much for calling the Red Apple Audio Network. Thank you, Kenny, at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Pete, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network with Walter Sterling. Hi.
So glad to hear you tonight. I'm a big fan of yours. I enjoy what you speak about. I enjoy that you worked at NBC when I was making the place a havoc.
Oh, my buddy. You're my buddy from NBC. How you doing, Pete? Is there trouble? Hey, wait. Is the snow? What about the snow? Do you see snow?
Well, nothing here yet in Staten Island, but Mentambio, whatever you want to call him, the communist, he's already put out that he have the kids not volunteer, 22 an hour to shovel the walk, you know.
All right, now, hold on. I need to explain to our millions of listeners outside the New York City area the stunning thing that the mayor of the city of New York, not Des Moines, said. He said, we're going to need a lot of help clearing the sidewalks, the city of New York, and if you'd like to become part of our shovel army, we will give you a shovel and we will pay you a fee to shovel walks. Now, Pete, the liability that man set up was insane. How many of you would like a heart attack? We'll pay you to have a heart attack. You, every one of you over 35, you pick up a shovel and shovel up wet snow. You're going to fill up those ER rooms. The dumbest thing I've heard. Now, Pete, tell them, please, how much Mayor Menslavi offered to pay for people to get a heart attack.
I think it's like 22 or more. I'm not sure. But nobody wants to shovel walk over here and stuff. You know, we just got over the snow today. The little rain we got was a warm rain, and it really broke it up a lot. You know, so now we're getting another bunch. They're saying up to could be up to 2 feet, 3 feet in spots. In Manhattan, we got a break because with the subways and the heat from the subways, usually it doesn't stick that much. So
if they run,
you know, but the thing is, you got to always prepare for the worst. I did all
right, now
shopping.
Listen, Pete, I have another question for you. This Frank Morano, who used to be the host of The Other Side of Midnight on the Red Apple Audio Network, now he's a politician on Staten Island. How's he doing for you? You're in Staten Island. How's Frank doing?
Frank is a personal friend of mine, And, you know, I met him through the radio.
He denied it. He said he doesn't know you.
And he would deny it because
he did.
His wife played softball with us one time, and she slid into the base, and he slid into the base. It was like he was going to kill her. It looked like the Pete Rose slide when they played the Mets, you know? And I said to him, that's your wife, you know? How can you hit her that hard? Well, if she wants to play the base, she better play it right. You know, I'm telling you. And that son of theirs is so cute. He's handsome, good, smart kid.
Well, I think what has to happen is for you to say to Frank Morano that we all need to go over to his house for a barbecue in the spring. Is that a good idea?
Well, you know what he did one time? He gave his address when he was doing about a pizza delivery over the air. So I called the screeners. I says, could you, you know, cut that out of the podcast? But they didn't. So everybody knew his address. Matter of fact, well, one of the callers they used to call years ago, he would go in front of the house when Frank was working and serenade his wife with Frank Sinatra songs. And this guy was terrible, but he was 6'7". His name was Gary. Yeah. So Frank would call me at home and say, could you go get Gary away from the house? Because my wife is terrified to go by the window.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'd be terrified if you were by the window. Thank you very much, Pete. Thanks for calling the Red Apple Audio Network with the update on Frank Morano. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Walter Sterling for T.J. McCormack. I've now said everything I'm required by federal law to say every 4 minutes. I'll have a weather update for you. Beware, this is going to be 18 to 20 inches of blizzard snow. John in Reno, God bless you. Welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network with Walter Sterling. Hi, John.
Hey, Walter, good to talk to you on Red Apple.
I knew you
about 5-6 years ago.
You too.
You know, I've never applied for a job with a beard, but 4 times I was hired by gentlemen with beards, and all 4 of them turned out to be wonderful bosses.
Was it because of their beard? Did they let you touch their beard?
No, nothing like that.
Mm.
They were just warm people, family men, but they had beards. One was in high school at a gas station to be a cashier. Another one was at Waccamaw Pottery to be a cashier in high school. And then one was to be an engineer with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Mr. Marth had a beard.
Mm.
And then I had one in San Francisco with a telemarketing firm, and he had a beard. And they were all wonderful people.
Well, I really appreciate the call. I thank you for the rundown on your resume relative to beards. It's an important update at 35 past the hour. Martin in upstate New York. I'm sorry you're in upstate New York. It's a place where it's upstate New York. I went to Syracuse, so I speak from personal knowledge. It's where early 20th century novelists would go to kill themselves, upstate New York. But welcome, Martin. I hope everything's going better for you.
Everything is great. I'm waiting on the snow, and I can't wait. I mean, I'm ready with my shovel. And I was listening to you all night. So what you need for your basement is a sump pump, number one.
Terrifying.
Number two.
Listen to me. I know what a sump pump is. And if you have a sump pump in your basement, it is the scariest.
I don't need one.
Why? Why don't you need one?
Because I don't get water in my basement. You were talking about water in your basement. You need a sump pump.
Yes.
But anyway, going on. Let's see. A lot of these Epstein girls, they were over 18 at the time when these things happened. You know, if you listen to Greg Kelly, you know, he'll explain it. Listen to Greg Kelly. WABC is the greatest radio station, okay? WABC. I get my information from WABC and the New York Post. So
if you get your information from WABC and the New York Post, as I do, there's really no need for you to leave the house. Everything's covered. And by the way, if you can get, and you can, where you live, if you get the newspaper as opposed to the online New York Post, it is a better experience. There are stories in the newspaper that are not online, usually involving large-breasted women. And that can't be beat. You can't have anything better than that. Have you found that to be true?
I like large-breasted women, and in fact, I like big-butt women. But anyway.
Well, are you married?
Not exactly, no. No.
This is a yes or no. This is a yes, no. Are you married?
No. No. But
were you ever married? You have to listen to me. I'm the host. Were you ever married?
I was never married. I guess I came close once.
Are you staring at my breasts again?
Why did she run away from you, this woman who you almost married?
Because she was stupid. That's why.
Is it possible, my friend, that she was a genius? I think it's possible she was a genius. Yeah, upstate New York. Okay, listen, thank you very much for the call. At 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Anthony on Long Island, welcome to the Red Apple Radio Network with Walter Sterling.
Hi, Mr. Sterling. Could you please help me better understand or discuss the Savannah Guthrie and her mother having gone missing in Arizona? There's so much ambiguous information that we're being provided, and it seems as though there's a lot more that they're not discussing, which speaks volumes to the situation at hand. I mean, it looks to me as though they're rounding up all the people that could have some sort of like the loose links with regard to the Epstein investigation, regarding the Clintons were supposed to testify. Now, if you look at Savannah Guthrie's husband, Michael Feldman, he started a consultant group called the Glover Park Group, which are political consultants to the Clintons. And he was the guy that stopped the count in when they had the hanging chads. I mean, this guy's hands are all over the Clintons.
You know, listen to me. Listen to me very carefully. You are a professional talk show caller, because in 90 seconds, you have intertwined all conspiracy theories of the day into 90 seconds. This is an admirable skill. What have you missed? Is there anything you've missed? What about Hillary? Did she shoot anybody? And what about Tartaria? When are you going to talk about our Tartaria?
Well, the problem is that it just seems as though that there's so much we're not being told. And when you look at the people behind the scenes that they're not talking about, you say to yourself, what's wrong with this picture? And it's not let's just say this. Savannah Guthrie had stated that she had spoken to the people that kidnapped her mother, and she heard them loud and clearly, and they were going to pay them. They were going to do whatever they wanted. To the
Satan lives, just terrible.
To, you know, who is she referring to? We don't even know. I mean, they act like they don't know. They're looking for her pacemaker. You know.
Go on.
Hello.
Yeah. Go ahead. Go on.
No, have
you covered everything?
Hi, I'm William Devane.
Have you covered everything?
No, I think we're just touching on the cherry on the top of the cake here. I mean, with regard to what's going on.
Sorry.
It's not being discussed with regard to the precarious nature we find our supposed democracy. I mean, we're being led by criminals.
Yes. Now you've spoken the truth. And I thank you very much for your call. We are being led by criminals. To quote my father, a Jersey guy, whenever discussing our leaders, they're all crooks. They're all crooks. I'm Walter M. Sterling, Red Apple Audio Network. For TJ McCormack, you and I can talk at any time. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222, 42 past the hour. The Red Apple Audio Network.
All night long, this is another Side of Midnight with TJ McCormack, 77 WABC. It's Another Side of Midnight.
Political humorist T.J. McCormick.
Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC.
Here's T.J. McCormick.
Walter M. Sterling for T.J. McCormack on the Red Apple Audio Network.
And production number 1416, and it's take one.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
Stand by. And five, four, three, two, one.
Upon a music, John. Push
get
in.
Ready to match the star, the Charlie's Angels, David Doyle.
And put in two.
Brett Summers.
And put in one.
Just sprinkle some pepper into your toilet.
Are you ready? I know you have one. Let's go. Let's go. Pick it up. You're driving an Uber, a taxi. Take out your kazoo.
He's a therapy. As you can plainly see, at night when he's asleep, into his tent he'll creep, and the stars that shine above will light their way to love. He rules.
All right, that's enough of that. I don't want you to get too excited. If they ever let me come back, there'll be more of that. But I don't want you to get too excited just yet. But here's an interviewer talking to Sydney Sweeney, asking the question. You ready? I don't know if you can handle this. Not that. I stopped that. Why'd you go do that again? I can't believe that happened again. Is it a union problem? You have to finish the song? It's outrageous. Here's an interviewer asking Sydney Sweeney the question.
Ketchup?
Sir.
What did she say?
Ketchup?
Sir.
What'd she say?
Ketchup?
Sir.
Oh, my God. Is that one of the greatest moments? And then the podcast that had that, it ended. We didn't get to see what happened next after the interviewer said.
Ketchup?
Sir.
Are you staring at my breasts again?
All right. It's 48 past the hour. 48 past the hour with Walter M. Sterling. Good evening. For T.J. McCormack, who's very anxious now. He's going to be coming back very quickly, I promise you. John. Oh, look at you. And Brewster, welcome to... Welcome to welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network. Hi, John.
Hello.
Yeah, hi, John. Welcome to the Giant Network Radio. You prepared? When you go on network radio, you have to be like front and center, ready to go, 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 go.
I'm at the center of a lot of things. I have 2 points I want to make. First of all, Santa Claus, he had a beard. He dressed in red, right? He says, ho, 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 and carried a swag bag. Very popular man.
But he's a seasonal business.
About people with beards.
Hey, John, listen. Santa's a seasonal business. We're talking about at least a 4-year term. I'm saying, and this is not political, because I think he's great. I think his policies are terrific. Total respect for him, and he's from Ohio. All of my in-laws are from Ohio. It's why I avoid it at all costs. But listen, the fact is he's not going to win. And it's not because he has a beard. It's because he has a bad beard. He has a scruffy-looking beard. He has one of those. It doesn't fully grow in. He's got a whole line. He's got like a tree line on his beard. It's very unattractive.
Wow. But you know a lot about beards. You know that?
No, I just know about his beard. Now, what else did you have, John? You have two points.
The other
Go
thing
ahead.
Was, look, we're going to have a blizzard. May I make a suggestion?
Yes.
The white people are going to disappear. Can you ask the
Thank
black
you for
people
the call.
Who...
Thank you for the call. Thank you for the call. That's exactly what we want, isn't it? That that high level of entertainment at 50 minutes past the hour. Greg, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network with Walter Sterling at 800-848-9222. Hi.
Hi. I've been ice boating all day in Wisconsin, and I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but why does not the science of remote sensing, heats, there's satellites everywhere, and there are infrared satellites, and why hasn't the remote sensing industry weighed in on the Nancy Guthrie matter?
Probably because they haven't been asked. It's a really good question, Greg. That even though you've been ice fishing all day and it was completely irrelevant to what you were talking about, it's a very good question as to why all technology has not been used. What scares me most for that poor old woman is that the sheriff announced. Why the hell would you announce that you're going to withdraw resources from this hunt? Yesterday he announced, I'm pulling in some of my men, some of my resources. We're just not going to be able to spend as much time on this. Now he's in some obscure Arizona town that nothing's going on, and he's going to pull off some of his men to do what? Give out more parking tickets? This is a mess. And Savannah, poor Savannah's on the air saying, I'm never going to go back to the Today Show. I won't be working anymore. And they've cleared all the relatives. Okay. This is not an obscure place. It's in Arizona, in a wealthy community. Impossible that nobody saw nothing. Oh, wait. We do. We have the Ring camera picture of this woman. We have dry desert. What does that mean? Sneakers, tire marks. I think you probably in half a day with some of your fisher friends could find that woman. What do you think?
Boater, I'm hip. There's a million people that make a living with remote sensing, and there's a million satellites up there. Are you telling me that there's not infrared heat? When you turn on your engine on your car, your hood glows red to these satellites. Are you telling me? No.
I agree with you, Greg. You're absolutely right, and I feel it's a tragedy that this woman hasn't been found. Thank you very much for calling the Red Apple Audio Network. Thank you very much. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Savannah's announced she's not going to go back on the Today Show. The sheriff has announced that he has so much else to do that he can't pursue the situation anymore, that he's all done. He's withdrawing resources. That was his phrase, withdrawing resources. You're in some suburban rich town in Arizona in January, which means it's 80. You have dry clay. Dry clay, they make pottery out of it. They make permanent cooking ware out of what they're walking around on. It picks up and collects and remembers every shoe mark. every sneaker mark, every tire mark, and the son-in-law looks like Rasputin. Have you seen that son-in-law? That was the last person she had dinner with. I have a very unpopular theory, and I do not assume this at all. It's just a wacky theory that us conspiracy theorists have. My wacky theory, no, not that she was abducted by UFOs. That would be true if the X-Files was still on the air, but that's all done now. That whole abduction thing, that isn't going on anymore. No, it's he looks scary as hell. The son-in-law, her son-in-law looks scary as hell. They had dinner, and then she disappeared. They had dinner, then she disappeared. Répétez, s'il vous plaît. They had dinner, then she disappeared. And he looks like Rasputin. My theory has been that they had an argument over his inheritance. She's got money. She's got a big house. And she also has the less attractive daughter. And he's married to the less attractive daughter. And Savannah's making like $15 to $20 million a year. My mother would say, there's money there. There's a lot of money there. That's what this is about. There's a lot of money there. And I believe what happened, my theory, and I'd like to know yours, what my theory is about Savannah Guthrie's mother, is that the somebody went in and said, okay, we have to get money from you. And she said, absolutely not. And they brought a thug with them, and the thug dragged her out and said, okay, until we're going to keep you until we get the money. Somewhere between that moment and where they took her to, she died. They weren't planning on that. That was not in the plan. I don't believe they meant to kill her. I believe they meant to get $15 million in crypto. And you and I have no idea how to get crypto. Where do you get it? Wait, this came from an imaginary mine by a man whose name we don't know. We don't have his address, not even his zip code. If you and I want to get some crappy product on Temu, we have to give them our zip code. Our address, but if you start up crypto, you can do all of this without any information at all, not regulated by the U.S. and the government, not regulated by any government, because nobody knows what the hell it is. If Warren Buffett isn't interested, pay attention. No, I think she was kidnapped for money. They were going to set up a ransom, and she died that night, the first night. Or else they would have presented evidence that she was alive. If you want $15 million in crypto and all you have to do is prove that an old lady is alive, she's not going to be moving around a lot. She isn't going to be trying to run away. She's going to be sitting there watching bad cable. And, hi, here she is. Here's a picture. Here's what she's saying. Give us the crypto money. They will, and it's done. I believe that she was not killed upon seizing her, that about an hour or two later, either her insulin ran out or her blood pressure medicine ran out. She had a heart attack. She died. Poor thing. Terrible way to end your life, right? And then they had the problem. They had a body instead of grandma. Those are my deep thoughts on Savannah Guthrie's mom. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Coming up, you and I are going to hear from Vic Ferrari, a retired New York City police detective. To me, there's nothing better than cop stories. You go to a cop bar, you hear them telling cop stories. I said to one of them, I said to Vic Ferrari, would you please come on my show and start telling cop stories? And he's agreed to do that. So Vic Ferrari tells great cop stories. And what else we got for you? There's something else. Oh, yeah, yeah. You watch this new Star Trek show, that Star Trek Academy. That's terrible. But they also have the general Star Trek arch now about the burn, where half the universe burned up all at once. It happened in America. It actually happened in America, the burn. There was a major event called the burn, and I'll share with you what that did and what it was coming up in just seconds. Walter Sterling for TJ McCormack. This is the Red Apple Audio Network.
It's another side of midnight. 77 WABC. This is another Side of Midnight with TJ McCormack. Now to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC. Here's TJ McCormack.
Walter M. Sterling, an honor to talk with you, TJ McCormack fans. Great to know you. I appreciate it. And I will talk to you because this is a live radio show. There's nothing else live right now. Those cute little FM stations with more music and less talk. Why do they say it if it's more music and less talk? Mysteries of our time. Mysteries of our time.
Why are men expected to accept female hormones, but women won't accept male hormones?
Ignorant, but I've never once been. I've definitely been like, wow, what a horny man. But I've been like, oh, my period, I'm so mean. Okay, wow. I don't. That's a good question.
Amanda Seyfried asks the key question of Sydney Sweeney.
Can I touch him?
Sure.
Amanda Seyfried, the hot little actress, looking at Sydney Sweeney, asking the key question of our time.
Can I touch him?
Sure.
800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Silas, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network with Walter M. Sterling for TJ McCormack. Hi.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about, the nobodies of us who really make the country work as
the
opposed
misfits.
To the guy in the
You and I are misfits. We don't fit in. We're different. Are you left-handed?
No, I'm right-handed.
Are you flat-footed?
I don't even know.
Are you married?
No.
Have you ever been married?
Nope.
There you are. You're a misfit. You're not part of society in a traditional way. Silas, how uncomfortable do you feel when somebody says to you, we like team players?
Well, I kind of tie into the way we make a team player, meaning we all got to work together to make it work. We can't just depend on Donald Trump.
No, we're not talking about that. That's a lot of nonsense. Nobody cares about that. I care about you and your situation.
Well, I'm talking about the way we make America work. Us people out here who do the grunt work. That's
are
my,
you,
sh-
are you
shout
shoveling
out
snow?
Because I'm a fellow truck driver.
Yeah, are you shoveling? Are
we
you,
make
ah, there
happen.
It is. That's what I needed. I don't need your political speech. I need you to talk to me about being a truck driver. Do you drive an 18-wheeler?
No, straight jobs.
What does that mean?
That's, you know, just one unit box truck on one chassis. It's not two. It's not a track that would
like
trailer.
A pickup
one
truck.
Straight
what
box.
What yeah, class 20, license do you have? What class license do you have, Silas?
Regular class. In fact, I got to go renew my bus
what,
driver
C,
license. But
is it a C1 license? Is that what you've got?
Yeah, you know what? I got to look at it. What it is now? It's been years ago. But anyway, I want to talk about us as opposed to the suits.
Yes.
You know, the mandamis may look good, but they can't make the world work.
Agree.
We need people just like the guy who can fly that jet fighter, and he's a top gun, but there's got to be somebody who builds that jet fighter. And everything has got to be perfect so that when he does his job, it works out perfect. And everything from getting food across this nation to the guy who makes sure that truck runs and gets across the nation. Our enemies knew how to get at us. Instead of going toe-to-toe with us, fighting us, they got an idiot in office, Biden, and he allowed the invasion. So now they got 2 million operatives in this country, which is something we couldn't do because other countries are not stupid enough to let people just walk in. And that's how our enemies work at it.
Silas, you're absolutely right. I'm very glad you shared that and expressed it. You're a truck driver. Tremendous respect for you. Hard job. Serious liability issues. Are you a freelance truck driver or do you work for one company?
No, I work for myself.
How long have you been an independent truck driver? How long have you done it?
I got my license at 17, and I've been driving ever since, and now I'm 70.
Tremendous work. Thank you for your work. I would say thank you for your service, but it's such a trite phrase. I talked to people in the military. I said, do you like that phrase? They go, well, not really, no. But Silas, I like you, and I appreciate your call. Thank you very much for calling 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222, with Walter Sterling for TJ McCormack. At 10 minutes past the hour, Bobby in fancy Westchester. Where are you in Westchester? Are you in Scarsdale, some expensive town?
How's it going?
Yeah,
I'm a new rock of show.
Excellent, fabulous, fantastic. Welcome.
Yeah. Well, the thing with Nancy Guthrie and everything, I feel the people that took her, and I know there's more than one person, they were either in her house or somebody they know were in her house. They know she lived alone. They were in the house for, what, 30, 40 minutes? What were they doing? They're probably ransacking the place.
They did.
Forcing.
See, that's the thing, Bobby. There was no robbery. They didn't ransack the house.
But that's what they're telling us. Because if there's blood on her, and we don't know what went on. They don't tell us when we're inside that house. They were in that house, even if they're only in there for 15 minutes, they could tear the place upside down. And they were forcing her because they probably think big house, a lot of people have cash in the house, and they wanted the money, and she couldn't produce it because she probably didn't have that kind of money in the house. They took her out of the house. Now, we don't know what goes on, but I do know that there are a lot of electronics out there. There are license plate scanners. There are people who have cameras. There's cameras in her house. There are satellite photos. The cars today have multiple computers that can be tracked and traced right back.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So
yes.
They're telling us.
Yes.
Yeah, but they're not telling us everything. That's what I'm telling you. They're not telling us everything because they're holding back because her safety comes first. That's the way they're looking at it. And that's the way they can only look at it. Because let's face it. that camera, which shows that guy on that camera, you're not telling me that there aren't people who are just his body movements. People don't know who that might be. They've gotten tips. They're just holding back. And eventually we'll find out what, you know, with the end results. Hopefully she comes back.
Bobby, I appreciate the call. Thank you very much for calling from Westchester. Very fancy. Robert, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network. 800-848-9222. Walter M. Sterling for TJ McCormack. Robert, this is your time to become the media. You go on the air, you're the media. Go.
Good morning, Walter.
Good morning.
I haven't heard any mention of the presence or absence of fingerprints on or inside of the gloves. It's very easy to get fingerprints on gloves, taking them on, off, putting them on, or even inside the fingers.
You're right, OJ. Good point.
Yeah. I'm wondering, that's like a key piece of evidence that I haven't heard anything comment or statement about. That's kind of strange to me.
It is kind of strange, and I thank you for the call. Thanks very much for calling 800-848-9222. Walter Sterling for TJ McCormack. There's a great retired New York City police detective, brilliant author, funny as hell, looks at the humorous side of New York City police work, a retired detective. You have to be retired to tell these stories.
I'd like to tell a story from my days as working as a detective in the NYPD's auto crime division. When I first got to my office, there were several teams, and each team had a sergeant. And the place ran like a Swiss clock, except there was one sergeant in one team who was in everybody's business. He wanted to know if you were making arrests or doing search warrants. He didn't want you or your team to look better than his team. So he would always throw roadblocks out there to slow you down. And after a while, there was some pushback. But at the end of the day, the guy's a sergeant. And my sergeant was a nice guy and really didn't want to butt heads with the guy. So one day a detective in another team came up to me, and this is just before Christmas, and he said, "You're not going to believe this, but I just found something out about this sergeant." And what he told me was this guy was a soccer coach in his spare time for his kid's soccer team in upstate New York. And the guy had a big mouth. And apparently during one of these soccer games or practices, this sergeant got loud or got in the face of some woman. Well, the woman went home and told her husband, and the husband and her brother showed up at soccer practice the next day, chased the sergeant around the soccer field, beat the crap out of him, and broke his wrist. So when I heard the story, we couldn't stop laughing. And this was a year prior to me getting there, but still, now we knew about it. So my office always had a little Christmas tree where guys would put gag gifts underneath the tree. And they were funny, mocking other guys and what have you. So me and another detective came up with the idea. We got a hold of a soccer ball. We wrapped an ace bandage around it and put Band-Aids all over it. And we put it underneath the tree. Now, we didn't want to get caught because this guy was a real vindictive guy. So what we did was we signed out with everybody else on a Friday, went out for a couple of beers, came back to the office later that night when no one was around and put the soccer ball under the tree. I took off the following Monday and my phone is ringing off the hook. So finally I pick up and it's my confederate and I go, "What's up?" He goes, "You don't hear him?" And in the background, I can hear this sergeant screaming, "Who did this? There's going to be hell to pay for this." And I said, "What happened?" He goes, "Well, we all came into the office. He came in, he sat down, he looked at the soccer ball and he goes, 'What the hell is this?' He walked over, picked it up, put two and two together, and you know, he lost his mind." I go, "Well, don't give yourself up." He goes, No. He goes, "He does suspect us." He goes, "But he can't prove it." He goes, "But our sergeant's already laying cover for us because he said they signed out at 6 o'clock on Friday with everybody else." But we both lived within driving distance of the office, so it was pretty obvious that we did it. So you never know what's going to happen at an NYPD precinct with all the personalities. And for more behind the scenes NYPD stories, be sure to pick up my new book, NYPD Behind the Blue Wall of Silence.
Walter Sterling, Red Apple Audio Network.
How do you do what you do to me? I wish I knew. If I knew how you do it to me, I'd do it to you. How do you do what you do to me? I am feeling blue. a feeling in my heart, like an arrow passing through it. Suppose that you think you're very smart, but won't you tell me, how do you do it? How do you do what you do to me? If I only knew, then perhaps you'd fall for me like I fell for you. Passing through it. Suppose that you think you're very smart, but won't you tell me, how do you do it? How do you do what you do to me? If I only knew, then perhaps you'd fall for me like I fell for you. When I do it to you.
The most important thing to remember about Bruce Morrow is that he played every one of these songs first. And he played them here at WABC in New York first. That is the Red Apple Audio Network affiliate in New York. Bruce Morrow played every song that you love, that you danced to, that you prommed to. He played them first. The man started on Top 40 Radio in 1957, and his first job was in Bermuda. I've never asked him, how the hell did you scam a job in Bermuda? That is the fantasy job, right? To work in Bermuda. And you're in Bermuda. You can hear the Red Apple Audio Network over the air in Bermuda, OTA, coveted airtime. A great man. 6 to 10 every Saturday night. His stories are remarkable. I'll tell you a quick story about Bruce Morrow. It's my favorite story about Bruce Morrow. Me. Hey, buddy, me. I used to wear a suit, wingtip shoes. I hired Bruce Morrow at Sirius Satellite Radio. Me. His contract was up. The station he was working for did a stupid thing. They were in a position. I'm fighting with the microphone. I'm losing. They were in a position. They lost him. The minute I heard about that, I picked up the phone. No, I take it back. He called me to tell me he was available suddenly. I said to him, you will come over to Sirius Satellite Radio right now, and you're not going to leave till you make a deal. And he comes over, and we walk into one of the thousand of executive offices. And the thousand of executives didn't really quite internalize who this was in front of him. And the first question he asked Bruce Morrow was, hey, so who's the most famous person you know? Like, what kind of a rude crapola question is that to ask anybody, much less a legend? Who's the most famous person you know? I said, he's the most famous person he knows. And Bruce, he starts saying, you know, Neil Sedaka. I said, Bruce, didn't you introduce the Beatles at Shea Stadium? Isn't that a photograph of you at the Warwick Hotel interviewing the Beatles at the Warwick Hotel? Isn't that you? Yeah, it's me. The most famous person you know is pick a Beatle. Choose one. Good evening. 21 past the hour. Walter M. Sterling for TJ McCormack on the Red Apple Audio Network.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with TJ McCormack, 77 WABC. It's Another Side of Midnight.
Political humorist TJ McCormack.
Now to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC. Here's TJ McCormack.
Walter M. Sterling, an honor to fill in for TJ McCormack. I get to speak with TJ McCormack's large, significant audience, much bigger than I could ever gather myself. Size does matter. Bill in Maine, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network. Hey. Hi, Bill. Hi.
Good morning, Walter. How you doing?
Now, I have to say something very candidly with you. Can I be honest with you? Can I be your friend?
Sure.
All right.
Yeah.
Bill, our professional screeners, I said, well, do we like Bill? As in, will Bill be a good call? And they were like, 50-50. Now, Bill, I expect you to step up and be a great caller and show them exactly what a great caller sounds like.
Okay. 2 days after Christmas, I was in Nashville, Tennessee. I drive a truck for a living, an 18-wheeler. And I was out at 3 o'clock in the morning just walking because normally I run, but I had a great run the day before and my legs were tight. So I was just taking it easy. And a guy comes up behind me and asked me what I got in my fanny pack. And I said, none of his effing business. And then he shows me a gun and he goes, what do you got in the bag? And I said, whatever it is, I go, you ain't getting any of it. And he hits me in the head with the gun, and all the bullets fall out of his gun. And I thought about kicking the crap out of him right then, but realized that a lot of times there's one bullet left in the chamber, and I didn't want to get shot. So I took off, called the cops. They went out and got him. I ended up being taken to the hospital, got 3 stitches in my ear, and they also put glue on my ear to stop the bleeding. Didn't lose consciousness or anything, but the cop told me that the highest rate of crime in the country is in Memphis, Tennessee. I wasn't in Memphis. I was in Nashville. But
have you been to Memphis? Have you ever been to Memphis?
No, I have not.
And Bill, what is the end of this story?
Well, nothing really. I probably should have kicked the crap out of him right then because I know I could take him. He was about 4 inches shorter than me, and I'm very strong at 68 years old.
Now, okay, we have to talk about this, Bill. This is very, very important. Listen to Walter Sterling. I don't understand why people over 60 feel compelled to announce their age. When I get 20 and 30-year-olds, which is what most of the calls are, they do not announce their age. And thank you very much for calling. But here's what's going to happen. If you announce your age, if you call this show and announce your age, the next question I'm going to ask is, when was the last time you had sex? I will say, hey, I'm 83. Great. When was the last time you had sex? That's how we're going to handle that.
1416.
What was that? What did I do? I did something wrong. I know that's shocking. Oh, that's what I did wrong. You know, never let a host actually run anything. It never goes well. I will do this again.
And production number 1416, and it's take one.
Yeah, I'm going to...
Stand by. And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
On a music, John.
Push Get in. Ready to match the
and
stars.
Turn.
Charlie's Angels, David Doyle.
And put in 2.
Brett Summers.
And put in 1.
Charles Nelson Reddick.
And put in 2.
The Mass, Loretta Smith.
And put in 1.
Joey Mitchell.
And put in 2.
And Fanny Flay.
And
we play the star-studded big money match game 79.
Here's the shocking news. Do you know what the highest grossing corporation in the world is? You probably thought it was a Chinese oil refinery or John Catsimatidis oil refinery or John Catsimatidis empire of supermarkets. The highest grossing corporation in the world. I assumed really that it was a secret Chinese oil company. That's usually what's up there. Or maybe Toyota. Or Honda, or Volkswagen, right? That's who I assumed was the highest grossing corporation in the world. I mean, total billing.
Frequently at the largest corporation in the entire world, people will go and do penny ante thieving. And there was a feller, 44 years old, unidentified as this moment. And you'll understand more as the story unfolds. apparently had an amazing hunger and didn't want to do what normal people do by paying for the donut. So he steals a donut and he eats it. Probably was pretty delightful because it was at Walmart. Loss prevention noticed cameras everywhere at the Walmart. I hate to tell you this, but just look around. You'll see cameras everywhere. Police come in, arrest this feller, and find out that he's just loaded up with fentanyl and meth. If you notice when you go to Walmart sometimes, it could be first thing in the morning, middle of the day. It could be in the evening, late at night. There are a lot of people there who just are high. There's a lot of high people at Walmart. And I'm not talking about the associates. The associates are a perfectly straight and sober group of people. The arrest, according to the wonderful people at the Mount Juliet Police Department in suburban Nashville, the arrest is a reminder of how theft calls can lead us to other crimes, where dangerous drugs are located and removed from our community. Thank you to Walmart, your vigilant team. I'm just going to tell you something. You don't want to leave your meth and fentanyl like in the car, in the passenger seat. You got to take it inside the store. You've got to be able to go and do those things. That being said, it's best for you to deliver the meth and the fentanyl to where it's going. You're going to get paid. Life's good. And at your local Walmart, you can find many of the ingredients necessary to make your own meth just at home, like brewing beer. For the people of Walmart, this is Velo Hool.
All right, I'm Walter M. Sterling. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. It's stunning to me that Walmart is the highest grossing corporation in the world, and yet you spend most of your life doing whatever you have to do to not go into a Walmart. How much of your day do you spend thinking, I'm not going into the Walmart? Today, I'm just not going to do it. And then you decide, I'm going to use their Walmart delivery. If you ever sit down and do the math, and I don't recommend it because you have better things to do, if you ever sit down and say, what is the math of Walmart delivery? And then you start to understand how it is the highest grossing corporation in the world. Because in order to have delivery, you need to become a member of Walmart, and that's $12.98 a month. Oh, but you get all this free stuff. Study that carefully. Then you order something to be brought to your home or your apartment in your case. $35 minimum. What's important to remember about Walmart delivery, you first think it's a food delivery. Yeah, they do the food delivery, but they'll also deliver everything else to your door. $35 minimum. Great. And then it says, how much tip do you want to put on there? Well, now you're up to $12.98 monthly subscription fee to have this service and tip. And how much do you tip? You tip a gilt number, a custom number. It turns out to be $13.98, their calculation. And then you're going to click the button that says custom, and you're going to weasel it down to $10 and feel terrible. But that $10 on a $35 order, that $35 tip, the $5 tip on a $35 order, which, by the way, cannot be covered with food stamps or your OTB or your Medicaid thing. You have to use real cash for the tip. You've wiped out your savings. You've wiped out the discount with the tip. And then you get it delivered. Well, what do you see there? You have paid the employee, not Walmart, and you've paid a subscription fee, which you really shouldn't have had to pay, and you have a $35 minimum order. And that's why it's the highest grossing corporation in the world. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Pamela, every Pamela I've ever known is beautiful. Welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network, Pamela.
Oh, I won't argue with that.
You got it.
And it's so true. All of these sign-ons are just like a one big pyramid scam.
Yes.
And I want my 7 cents back that I've been ripped off from three different places because, oh, the penny isn't produced anymore. So they're making 7 cents on me and multiply that by millions. They're making good money off of this penny scam.
Now, Pamela, stop. Please stop. Tell me about this scam. This is one of the few scams that I have been protected from. I'm not aware of. Tell me about this penny scam, Pam.
Well, a lot of stores now are, rounding up or rounding down, saying they don't have a penny. So what they do is they cheat you out of pennies. And I know the administration thinks, oh, they're saving money. Yeah, on our backs. My father used to empty his pockets when to do laundry and everything, my mother, and she used to collect all the change. And I learned at a very early age, having depression era parents, that change matters. And my father was a great mechanic. He could fix anything. So he always had used cars that he fixed. And he said to my mother, you know, before I die, I want to get a brand new car. I want to know what that feels like. So my mother brought out the coffee can with all the change she gathered over the years and had enough for a new car. And
yes.
The government is telling us, oh, the pennies don't matter. Meanwhile, the stores are collecting every time you go shopping. And of course, if you so-called pay with cash. But even now, a lot of the places are charging the surcharge on credit cards. So we're getting ripped off and everybody is telling us, oh, no, it's great. We're saving money. Yeah, I haven't seen that money. Just like education never saw the money from Atlantic City. Yeah, I'm from Jersey, buddy.
I know
what's going on.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned about Atlantic City. That is one of my very favorite scams. Let me bring the rest of America up to speed because this is an astonishing thing. Atlantic City casino licensing in Atlantic City was accepted and approved on the premise that those profits, those taxes on those casinos would be used to improve the state of New Jersey education, and it would go to eliminate the slums in Atlantic City. Well, it was a line we missed. Yes, it went to eliminate our ability to see the slums in Atlantic City, because what they did, you know this, Pam, but what they did is they built these 25-foot walls on the main highway into Atlantic City. On either side of the highway, you can't see Atlantic City when you drive into Atlantic City. They have hidden it behind 25-foot high barrier walls that protect us from seeing the slums. Have the slums been eliminated? No. Are the school systems better in New Jersey or in Atlantic City? No. Right, Pam? This was some scam.
I tell you, nobody does it like Jersey, you know, and the rumor has it that they keep Trenton, the capital down there in Trenton, so that most of New Jersey don't know what's going on. And it's so true. And these halfwits in New Jersey voted another Democrat in. This is such an idiotic state. It's just so weird.
Pam, you know, it was interesting today. You hear Governor Hochul in New York State tell the citizens of the state, lover or hater, tell the citizens of the state, we're going to have a blizzard. I don't want any nonsense. We're going to clear the roads. It'll be taken care of. We bought new equipment, but don't go out. Don't get in their way. Don't get in the way of the snowplows. Don't be a jerk. Basically, she kept saying that we're New Yorkers. We'll take care of each other. Just don't be stupid. All right. That's a real governor. The new governor of New Jersey, she's like, well, there's going to be some snow, and I hope you stay home. That's not a right. Did you hear? She was so pathetic, Pam. You're the best. Thank you so much for calling 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Hello, Fred. Welcome to the Big Apple Radio. Now, I hate you. You're in Florida?
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Where? Where in Florida? Fred.
St. Petersburg.
Oh, wonderful place. Good for you. What's going on, Fred?
It's nice down here.
Yes, sir.
I'm a retired 18-wheeler, and I could tell you a story about Walmart. When I was driving early on, it was when Walmart first started becoming big, you know. And they'd advertise American-made products. I don't know how old you are, but if you remember some of those ads for Walmart, you know, way back in the day, they advertised that everything was made in America. Well, one time I picked up a load of New Jersey, and I went in to use the bathroom in this in this factory, not a factory, but they were taking containers off the ship,
right,
and unloading them there. And I went in, and there was a long table with a bunch of people on it, and they were taking these picture frames out of these boxes that had Chinese writing on them and putting them in little boxes that had American flags on them. And then I took them to a Walmart distribution center. I forget where, but probably Arkansas back then, because you know they started out there.
Yeah,
anyway,
still
that's
there.
That's my story. Fred, but that goes to corporations to do about anything. Yeah.
Fred, I thank you very much for the call. Call every day, and I'll get a 10 share. Thank you very much. What a great story that is. I appreciate that. I love those stories. 800-848-9222, Red Apple Audio Network, Walter M. Sterling for T.J. McCormack.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with T.J. McCormack, 77 WABC. It's Another Side of Midnight.
Political humorist T.J. McCormack.
Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC. Here's T.J. McCormack.
Walter M. Sterling, filling in for T.J. McCormack, Another Side of Midnight. Welcome. This is the Red Apple Audio Network. And no, I don't believe anybody's going to get a big CEO job or president of the United States if they have a scraggly beard.
I don't know if anybody's told you this. Goatee, facial hair, the industry is very conservative. They're just going to think you're a goofball potentially, or like, you know, whatever. And I have facial hair. I don't care, but it's my own, like, I run my own business. But if I was interviewing for investment banking and for finance, this would all come off. And that goes along with the photo as well. Go clean shaven, get the photo done. Once you get the job, do whatever the hell you want. So people get weird about like telling you that, but like I'm telling you, people are going to judge you on that. So like, why even let it be a thing?
It's the Trojan horse factor. Look the part of the job you want. You're looking for a job. You're trying job interviews. Dress. Study the company. Study what does the president of the company wear? What does she wear? Look like her in the job interview, you will get the job. Then once you're in there, take out the septum ring, the tattoos, no problem. But first, get the job. It's very important also, when doing a show like this at this hour, you and I are going to spend a lot of time on conspiracy theories, because frankly, there's nothing more entertaining.
I distinguish between the deep state, which is the Vatican, the Rothschilds, and the Chabad Jews. And then they use the Freemasons and the Knights of Malta as fixers, and they use the City of London, Wall Street, central banks as managers. That's the deep state. Below the deep state is the shadow government, which is comprised of the politicians and senior bureaucrats, many of the murderous pedophiles that have been brought into the pedophilia system as a control blackmail element. Those are the shadow government people, but they're not the deep state. They're the best of the servant class.
Are you keeping
the
track?
Different
here?
Ways in which keeping the deep track? State, and particularly the Zionist supporting foundation for the deep state, which has the Anti-Defamation League as its primary secret police, they censor, manipulate, and digitally assassinate people.
Yeah.
And the reason they do this is because those people are getting close to the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And production number 1416, and it's take one.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
This is the director saying which camera to take at the beginning of the match game.
Stand by. And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Come on, music, John.
Push get in. Ready to match the stars.
The Charlie's Angels, David Doyle.
And put in two.
Brett Summers.
And put in one.
Charles Dyson Rutter.
And put in two.
The match.
Loretta Smith.
And put in one.
I love that. I'm such a loser. I love that. The Great Chicago Fire, October 8th through the 10th. It was a 2.5-day fire in 1871. It killed approximately 300 people, destroyed 17,000 structures. But the Great Chicago Fire was one fire on that date, October 8th to October 10th, 1871. It destroyed Chicago. It leveled Chicago. However, on the new Star Trek, they keep talking about an event that they're very vague about called the Burn. And apparently what the Burn was it destroyed most of Starfleet, it destroyed the Federation, it destroyed planets within the Federation, and they had to start their civilization from scratch. And they call it the Burn on Star Trek. And I can't stand that Starfleet Academy. I don't like Star Treks that don't fly. I didn't like Deep Space Nine because they didn't fly. I want them to fly. That's why I watch it. It's the reason I stopped watching Lost in Space when I was a kid, was because they didn't fly. They sat on the Jupiter's 2, start on sat on Alpha Centauri, and they didn't go anywhere, and Slezak came and visited them. Remember that? Yeah, I know. They were all very hot, but nevertheless. All right. Throughout America, let me get my note here. Throughout America, the same time that the Great Chicago Fire took place, other cities burned. Other cities burned the same day throughout the country. Major cities from San Francisco to the Midwest burned. And because there weren't, because one of the first things that went down was the telegraph wires, it wasn't universally known, it wasn't generally known that these other cities disappeared. These other cities were leveled by fire the same day as the Chicago fire. San Francisco, Cedar Rapids. Throughout the Midwest, there were numerous fires that destroyed entire cities. It was not a coincidence. Many believe it was set on purpose, that these fires were started on purpose for one reason, to destroy history. There was a movement between 1850 and 1900 that you and I are going to talk about if they ever make the mistake of letting me on this station and this network again. You and I are going to talk about the Burn. There was the Burn in the United States of America. It started in Chicago. On the same day, it leveled other cities. And because there were no telegraph lines, there was no internet, that information did not become generally known for many days, maybe weeks, until the country realized, oh, this was a major event. This was this a coincidence? It was no coincidence. There were extraordinary atmospheric conditions that caused all of these cities to catch on fire at once, or were there? Were they set on purpose? Between 1850 and 1900, our country went through extraordinary change because of the Civil War. I want you to think about a person born 10 years before the Civil War, and they lived for 90 years. They lived till about 1950. From right before the Civil War to 1950, that person saw the Civil War, World War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, and World War II, and the Korean War. Can you imagine the perspective on history that person had? A few smart historians said, we have to interview these people. We have to do whatever we can to interview these people. And they identified thousands of people who met that criteria. They were born right before the Civil War, and they were aging out in the 1950s. They saw everything. They saw the Spanish-American War. They saw World War I. They saw World War II. They saw Korea. They saw television, automobiles, radio, telegraphs. They saw the advent of all of those things. They had the most remarkable perspective on American history, on history of the world of anybody. They knew a world before the Civil War, before World War I, II, the Korean War, television, radio, national magazines, automobiles. They lived before and after the most, the and the telephone, the major events of the of the 19th and 20th century in the United States of America. Finally, some historians said, maybe we should talk to these people. And they identified about 2,100 of them. They were able to sit down and do detailed interviews with them, not with tape recorders. They wrote it down. They wrote down. They had historians, librarians go and meet these people and ask for their stories. What a great thing, right? And then those interviews were gathered up and nobody did anything with them. Then they were put into the Library of Congress and then into the National Archives. And nobody to this day has done anything with those stories. Excuse me. No one has done anything with those stories. How sad is that? There seems to be a great fear of getting detailed information about the history of America during that period of time, especially from 1850 to 1900. And part of it can be seen in the fact that the architecture changed dramatically during that period of time. The great neo-Gothic buildings that we see around the country that are courthouses, train stations, churches, they were built between 1850 and 1900. No more were built. You look at the gargoyles, you look at the detailed cement work, you look at the detailed mosaic on the floor of those buildings, and you're going, wait a minute. What do they build across the street from my house? Look at the office building near me. They're ugly. They're square. There's nothing ornate about them. Nothing beautiful. No, oh, wow, this is such a beautiful building. Where are those? Where, besides Frank Gehry building, you know, bizarro buildings in Lower Manhattan, where are the great architects building beautiful buildings? It's important to remember that when the beautiful Beaux-Arts buildings were built in the late 1800s throughout America, the Singer Building, the Woolworth Building, when these buildings were built, there were not steam, there were not electric bulldozers, there were not paved roads. Construction materials were built in, were brought in with horse-drawn carriages and trains, horse-drawn trains brought in this material. As we got more and more capable of making beautiful architecture and beautiful buildings, we did it less and less. Why was that? It has been suggested, and I agree, that the controlling ruling class, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, They didn't want that. The Fords, the Carnegies, they didn't want those ornate buildings. Those were very expensive to build. They took a long time to build. They wanted to expand their industries as fast as possible. And therefore, they needed to lower the expectations of you and me in terms of what could be built. Because not only did they not build any more like that, you haven't seen any buildings built like that in your lifetime. They tore them down as much as they possibly could. They got rid of as many of those buildings as they possibly could. Look at Penn Station in New York City. Penn Station was a grand steel-framed and glass building. It was magnificent. And what was put in its place is the ugliest train station in the world. And Madison Square Garden on the outside is the ugliest arena in America. Well, they didn't have to build it that way. You have probably walked around and said, why are we building garbage? And I believe the reason we're building garbage is the people in charge, and you know who they are. The people in charge don't want to build magnificent grand buildings. They don't want you and me to be inspired and awed, and they don't want to have to do it again. Those architects are hard to find. Those buildings are expensive to build. They want us to go to work. They don't want us hanging around in the lobby going, gee, this is such a great place. Why don't we just sit here for a couple hours? No, every office building you can think of has one purpose: to get you in that lobby and up that elevator, right? Let's go to work. And thanks to COVID, it's been proven that we don't actually need to go to work. Now, there's a real dilemma. We don't need to spend all of that money on daycare, automobiles, oil, and gas. Who wants us to spend a lot of money on oil and gas? Oh, the ruling class, the people in charge, the people who are secretly running our lives every single day. That's who. And that is why many believe, and I agree, that from about 1850 to 1900, the grandeur of architecture throughout our country was either systematically destroyed and or stopped. No more of those buildings were built. You go downtown in any older city, in any Northeast city, and you look at those buildings that were built there in the 1800s, and you'll see two things. One is you'll see that many of them, it appears that their construction date has been changed. That it looks like that concrete has been sanded down and a new date put there. And the name of the building was erased and a new name was put there. Now, why is that? Well, you and I can explore that in great detail. Again, if they ever invite me back. Now, let me just see what the national weather is like, because this is quite the storm. This is quite the storm. This is going to have 12 inches to 16 inches of weather in New York City and throughout the Northeast. And when you're on the radio and it's snowing outside, it's best to talk about the weather. But let me give you a going away weather here. One second. Blizzard, winter storm warnings issued, could be the biggest in a decade. I'll bet you, and the coastal flooding, I'll bet you that you're going to get the day off on Monday. What a mess. Let me get all of this for you, my friend. Coastal flooding warning in effect from 10 p.m. tonight until 2 a.m. Monday morning. There's more. It's expected to be the most vulnerable locations near the waterfront and shoreline. Expect 1 to 2 feet inundated extra waves, ground level, low-lying vulnerable areas, some roads and low-lying property, including parking lots, lawns, and homes. Businesses with basements near the waterfront will experience shallow flooding. Those are the coastal flooding situations. We're expecting 12 to 18 inches of snow in New York City, Boston, throughout the great Northeast. This is a nor'easter. When the governor of New York gets up there and screams and says, stay home, don't do anything, she said, watch the Winter Olympics. There's nothing I want to do less than watch the Winter Olympics, but she actually made it sound appealing. Whereas the governor of New Jersey goes, well, you know, we're going to probably get some snow. Like, what? Be a governor. Be in charge. Tell us what the situation is. Blizzard conditions, day and a half. Probably the airports will be closed for a couple hours. Probably the schools will be closed. Severe conditions, weather conditions tonight and tomorrow. Walter M. Sterling, the Red Apple Audio Network.
It's another side of midnight. 77 WABC.
Rural Americans deserve access to the best our nation has to offer, especially when it comes to healthcare. Across every state and every community, America's rural hospitals are the first line of defense, protecting our families, neighbors, and loved ones. No matter where you live, hospital care doesn't clock out. They're there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Each year, America's over 5,000 hospitals care for millions of patients, providing 24/7 emergency care, delivering babies, cancer treatments, and other life-saving care that patients rely on. Behind every one of those patients are doctors, nurses, and caregivers working tirelessly to keep people healthy and safe. Hospitals are our community's lifelines. They employ our neighbors and keep our families health. But now, some in Congress are threatening access to care. Tell Congress, protect patient care to keep America strong. Don't cut rural health care.